And hello again, everyone. Welcome back to One Patriot Place here on WBLZ Sports, Ironic Radio, and the FullPressCoverage.com website. Be sure to download the app and check out our buds over there at Full Press Coverage. They write a lot of excellent Patriot stuff, and we recommend them highly. You're on the air with Stephen Murph. And yes, the sun did rise this morning. The sky did not fall. You know, cats and dogs are not living together. You know, total anarchy. Yet the Patriots lost a football game, and you would think it's the end of the world. I think we're ready for the apocalypse now. You know, fans are jumping off the Tobin Bridge. And some of the comments I've seen on social media are absolutely hysterical. So with that being said, I'm going to bring on the big green man. What's going on, Murph?
Trying to think. Is there any big news, anything happening this week that, you know, do you recall ever saying that this team was going to go, you know, 16-0 in the regular season? Did you say that?
Actually, quite the opposite. We've said on this show, and we said it last week, that this team is not going to go undefeated.
No, it's not. And this is the, their first loss of the season. Their first loss. Okay. At the beginning of the year, I think Steve called for 12-4. I called for 13-3. So, you know, we're on our way. Like you said, the sky is not falling. What happened last night, I don't want to say happened because of stupidity, but that, you know, played a big part in it. The Lions got outplayed, both the lines. And
absolutely.
Once again, when that happens, this is what happens. I thought, you know
and it's funny because Patriots fans have a real tough problem with saying, hey, our team got outplayed on Sunday night, which they did. Mm-hmm. They got outplayed. And it's okay to say that the opposing quarterback had a great game. Because he did. And that's the hardest thing. It was like, no, they feel like, oh, no, it was they lost because they made too many mistakes. No, they didn't lose. Granted, they made a lot of mistakes, ones they don't.
Right.
You know, and they uncharacteristically make. They, you know, stuff that they don't normally do, they did. But you know what? You know why they did those things? And it's the flip side of, when we hear other teams say, well, our team made too many mistakes. You know, the Ravens caused a lot of those. So,
yeah,
give the Ravens credit. They were the much better team on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, they didn't do anything. They didn't use trickery. You know, they didn't use anything. Oh, they unleashed some different formations. They lined up hat on a hat and said, we're going to push the ball forward. Their offensive line won the game. You know,
game
they
ball.
Ran for 210 yards.
All the fat guys, game ball.
Yeah, there was nothing tricky about it. There was no, you know, hey, they lined up. They were better. And it's stuff happens. And it's
Patriots,
like. Go ahead.
The Patriots got beat by my high school offense on Sunday. You know, that's what happened. It's plain and simple. You line guys up hat on hat. And let's see who's going to win. And, you know, guess what? Lamar Jackson and his boys won.
Yeah. Oh, it's like people, they can't understand it. They can't wrap their heads around it because it's like they're so spoiled in this fan base. It's impossible for them to say, you know what? The other team was better. And it's so funny. It's like if you say that, oh, no, no, it was all – they got lucky. It was the bad refs. Come on.
No.
I watched that game. That game, the Ravens were much better. Granted, they made some mistakes that maybe they won't make if they meet again down the road.
Right.
With some of those option plays where they, you know, bit. But that's part of the process. Guess what? Ravens were better. And, you know, they were all right down their throat. I mean, it wasn't like Jackson passed for 400 yards. I think he passed for a buck 63, but he didn't have to, you know?
He didn't have to.
You know, why would they ball for...
That's it. Right. And see, this is what happens when things get helter-skelter, and 90% of this league, the quarterbacks in this league, will chuck it up, okay? Jackson doesn't have to do that. You know, he can still escape. He can still, you know, sidestep here, sidestep there. Oh, look, there's some daylight over there. I'm going to go run to it. And the issue was there was over pursuit by the linebackers. They didn't mind their gaps, which was, you know, in both of our keys. And the defensive line got blown up the entire bloody game. And now we're going to bring on the head of the Lamar Jackson fan club, and one of my favorite human beings of all time, who's here to poke me with a fork and repeatedly. But, you know, God damn it, Evan, this was not supposed to go this way, but it did. Evan Lazar of CLNS Media is joining us today to bring his knowledge and gloat just a little bit. Just a tiny little bit about his man today. EZ, what's up, bud?
You know, I'm not going to take too big of a victory lap on you, Murph, but I did tell you so.
Damn. I got an I told you so. I got an I told you so.
And you, I you know only usually gonna... get that from my wife.
And it's a well-deserved I told you so, even though your boy still is having all of the same problems that he's had since he was in college, and I didn't want him here, and you were all over him. But no, he's still throwing from a freaking terrible base. His footwork is still terrible. But he beat us, and he beat the Patriots soundly. He used his legs. The Patriots were stupid. The fat guys up front got blown off the ball on both sides. Give me your take. First of all, tell me this. Why did Bill Belichick decide to go big up front against this team? Because that was the first mistake that was made.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the more interesting mistakes. And just credit to the Baltimore staff, because Lamar does have limitations. But what they've done in Baltimore, Greg Roman and John Harbaugh, to craft this offense and create this offense around the things that he does well as a runner,
right,
and then allow him to make easy throws underneath the defense from there against the Patriots, it's really a well-crafted and very creative scheme. And they're basically turn back the clocks and are running some sort of veer type system where they're
it's a wing T, man.
Yeah,
they're running the wing T out there.
It's a veer. I saw Go ahead.
Yeah, I saw the wing T in a high school game this weekend, and
and the
team that ran it ran the ball really well.
Yeah, you can certainly do that out of this formation and out of this with this personnel, and that's really a testament to Baltimore, is that they've taken a guy that really isn't all that great of a passer yet and have still crafted an offense around him where he can be explosive both throwing the ball and running the football because of the way that they create openings by playing 11 on 11 essentially and making the defense focus on him as a scrambler so much. But what went wrong for the Patriots? I think the Baltimore coaching staff deserves credit too for the opening sequence of the game. They came out and they started running those quarterback option plays with Lamar in the zone reads in the backfield, but instead of zone reads, they were gap reads, and they knew that the Patriots were going to two gap. They were going to try to hold up at the point of attack on the defensive line, and they were going to eat blockers, and they were going to flow to the ball and do that sort of thing. So instead of running zone to the outside and trying to get on the perimeter against a flowing defense, they decided to run gap and really just gash them right up the middle and pin guys inside and then read the play, have Lamar read the play based off of one defender. So the first play, that 14-yard gainer for Mark Ingram, they had him reading Adam Butler on the left side. Butler goes out to protect against the the keeper for Lamar going on the outside, and Lamar just gives it to Ingram, and Ingram goes right up the middle for 14 yards. A couple of plays later, they come back to the same play. Lamar once again gap read, a little bit of like a lead ISO type play, like a fullback almost, with the tight end moving up through the hole. Same exact thing. He reads Lawrence Guy. Lawrence Guy crashes down on Ingram. Lamar keeps it 18 yards. You know, and that's what they just did over and over again. And they were able to really expose the two gapping system and the 3-4 system of the Patriots to both the three down linemen and the fact that they were two gapping. I'm really interested to see moving forward the Patriots, if they have the versatility to now answer a lot, because you're going to see this for the next month. We're going to see the Texans. We're going to see the Dallas Cowboys. We're going to see the Philadelphia Eagles. They're going to all try to do this exact same thing, because they got quarterbacks that aren't as mobile as Lamar, but they can all run a little bit, especially Dak and Deshaun Watson, of course, who are Deshaun Watson might be as mobile as Lamar. So they have the ability to do a similar kind of style of game plan. So the Patriots are going to have to adjust here and figure out, can they go four down defensive linemen? Can they go to a one gap system and be a little bit more aggressive? I think that was the biggest mistake that they made, is they went heavy. So they were just slow all over the field against a really fast quarterback, and they weren't aggressive. They weren't having guys come down at the line of scrimmage. They weren't coming and bringing it to Baltimore, and they were on their heels and they were on their skates all day long, because Baltimore just kept on coming at them instead of vice versa.
Why not run quarters?
Well, that is what the Chargers did, right? That's what they did in that wild card game. They put seven defensive backs on the field. A lot of that was because, out of necessity, the Chargers were really banged up at linebacker, and they really had no choice but to go with a lot of defensive backs. I thought the Patriots might do that too, but they obviously just felt like they couldn't hold up against the run with those guys in there, and they weren't going to be able to handle the power. If it was me, you know, I probably would have done something more like that and just try to run around everybody and slip blocks and do that sort of thing, instead of trying to take everybody head on, which is what the Patriots decided to do. But I'm not sure if it would have really made that much of a difference either way in terms of personnel. It was really just execution, and the fact that the Patriots are really one-dimensional as a run-stuffing team right now, because they have Lawrence Guy, who's a two-gapper. They have Danny Shelton, who's a two-gapper up front. Not really sure what Adam Butler was doing on Sunday, but he's, I guess, theoretically a two-gapper. And they really don't have anybody there that can one gap and get up the field and explode off the line of scrimmage. Michael Bennett. And that they don't have that guy. So I
was waiting.
I'm worried that they're a little bit pigeonholed into this now, which is, you know, they can still get it done. They can still obviously make adjustments and get the job done, but they need more production out of their linebackers if they're going to do it this way. That's for sure.
Yeah. It seemed like after that horrific first quarter, you know, they seemed to get it figured out for a little bit. I think, you know, we saw Dont'a Hightower give a kind of fiery speech on the sideline.
A little pep talk. You know?
Yeah, a little pep talk. And that's kind of unlike him. He's usually kind of a quiet guy. And it seemed like, okay, yeah, they got to figure it out a little bit. But then later in the game, I guess in that late third, early fourth quarter, it seemed like they completely took over the game again. Was that your thoughts on this as well?
Well, I thought that they figured out some things in terms of they started sending some run blitzes at them. They started getting an ability to kind of get some penetration there and get those linebackers coming downhill a little bit more, I would say, in the second to third quarter range. Then in the fourth quarter, that long drive in the fourth quarter, the Ravens pulled out one little more game plan wrinkle, and they figured out that if they got the Patriots in the base defense, the Patriots were going to play some man coverage on third down especially, and they could throw the ball to the backs against the Patriots linebackers. So they had two big plays to Mark Ingram almost back-to-back. I want to say there was a couple plays in between where the first one they got him matched up in man coverage against Landon Roberts, and the second one they got him matched up against Hightower in the flat, and they gashed him on both of them. And that's kind of how they went down the field.
18 yards, 15 yards. Yeah, it was ugly. It was
ugly. And you know, they have three tight ends, and those were the main pass catchers. I mean, I think their wide receivers only caught four passes on Sunday night, because obviously they didn't have to. You know, they were playing from ahead, and they had the momentum going their way. But I mean, it's rare for you to see a team dominate where their wide receivers only catch four passes.
Yeah, it was a great game plan because really they decided, and rightfully so, we're not even going to throw at the corners. We're not going to throw at Gilmore. We're not going to throw at Jason McCourty or JC or whoever the case may be. John Jones was mostly used as a spy in this game when they went man coverage. But regardless, they're not going to throw at the corners. They didn't throw deep either. Lamar only threw one pass over 20 yards and it fell incomplete. And that 18-yarder to Mark Andrews was his longest completion of the day. Right, so they're not throwing the ball deep. Longest completion in terms of air yards, of course. So they're not throwing the ball deep. And what they decided to do is just throw and dink and dunk the ball down the field to the tight ends and to the backs out of the backfield. And really, it was a great plan because the Patriots' weakness in coverage is certainly still their linebackers. And they were able to kind of pick on the linebackers in coverage a little bit. The Patriots are playing a lot more zone coverage to kind of keep their eyes all on Lamar and keep everybody contained in the pocket with Lamar focused, you know, heavily focused on Lamar. And there was a lot of free releases out there. I mean, there were tight ends just running off the line of scrimmage with no resistance. No shit. Nobody, even after, you know, in that 5-yard contact window, was getting their hands on these guys. So they were just running all around the formation as free as could be. Wherever they wanted to go, they were going there without any resistance. And they really just won a bunch of foot races against the Patriots linebackers. It was, in the passing game at least, it was, you know, 10 or 15 different foot races that added up to, you know, where we, what we saw, that 163 yards or whatever it was. But it was really the running game. And my concern with the running game for the Patriots moving forward, the stuff in Cleveland, I don't throw it out, but I don't look at this as like they got gashed back-to-back weeks, because Cleveland gashed them in their dime defense. They put six defensive backs on the field so that they could bracket Odell Beckham for most of the game with Stephon Gilmore in the safety, and it was a monsoon. So it was really difficult to tackle guys, and it was really difficult to stop the run with six DBs on the field. So what? When you go to a game against Baltimore and you put 7 and 8 guys in the box, sometimes all defensive linemen and linebackers, and they still run the football on you, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. That's another team imposing their will against you and you not being able to stop it. So that's a concern more so, I would say, than anything that happened against Cleveland. So the Patriots really need to figure out how they can be stouter up front and be a little bit more physical against the run.
With Cleveland, I almost think it was a game plan thing, going back to the old days of the Colt, playing the Colts and saying, we're going to give you this. Go ahead and take it. Go ahead and take it. I think they kind of came into this game thinking the same thing, but Ingram has just been balls out. You know, he's just been, when you do it and you give up a 53 yarder and nobody's there to strip the ball at the two, these are the kinds of things that happen. And that's it. Let's flip it over to the other side of the ball, where I thought the Patriots actually had one of their better offensive games and game plans going into any matchup this season. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it was a good plan, and I really like this plan just in terms of their offensive identity moving forward. Like, I think this is who they should be, right? They're not the two-back team that they were last year. They don't have a fullback. They don't have the blocking up front from the offensive line and from the tight end position. So why try to be that? Why try to be a smash-mouth football team when you don't have the personnel? What they do have is they have a bunch of great pass catching running backs, and they have receivers now. They really do have receivers now.
They Edelman, do.
Mohamed Sanu, Philip Dorsett, N'Keal Harry will hopefully here soon. So spread the field, get some lighter boxes. He can hand the ball off on draws and stuff like that, and runs from the gun and do different things like that with the ball and shotgun. Give the ball to Brady, let him spread the ball around to 5 or 6 different receivers, get the ball out of his hands quickly, and really go with pace and space, you know, up the tempo a little bit, spread the field, and try to pick on matchups in the passing game. And I think that that's really the best bet that this offense has moving forward of being what they need to be to win a Super Bowl, because they're not going to be the run first team. They're not going to be the heavy team that they were last year. They just don't have that kind of group.
They really don't. Rex Burkhead made his return to the field this week. How do you think Rex looked?
So I don't know if anybody loves Rex Burkhead more than Josh McDaniels. And I don't know what it is. I think Rex is a fine back. right? And I think that he adds a little bit more versatility and maybe a little bit more just kind of knowledge of the system at this point in time and knowledge of how to kind of read out an NFL defense than Sony does at this point. That's not to say that he's more talented than Sony, because that's certainly not true, but Sony's struggled, and I think that Rex has had a better year so far than Sony has. With that said, I really don't understand the infatuation with Rex Burkhead. Josh McDaniels, going back to when Rex Burkhead was in the draft, McDaniels, this story's been out there a bunch, but McDaniels said he was the best running back in that draft class.
Yeah.
You know, he just absolutely really likes the guy. So I think that they like his versatility. I like his versatility. He runs hard. I think that he's a decent back, and now when they're going to go to this more kind of up-tempo, spread-the-field type look, probably for the majority of games, obviously some game plans will be different than others, but if that's going to be the plan kind of moving forward here, then you're going to probably see even more Rex Burkhead and not less of him.
I agree. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I like Rex too. So
I know you do.
But hey, I don't think he does anything great.
Yeah.
You know, I just think he does a lot of things well, and that kind of serves that point for the offense. But, you know, I agree with you. I know Josh is infatuated with him. I think Josh really, if anything, he may overrate him a tad to, you know, how valuable he is. But, you know, hey, the proof's in the pudding. He did do well last year in the playoffs in both of the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl. But, you know, that's for another time. Looking at this offense, I think we can all agree that the biggest issue they still have is they don't have a proper red zone kind of go-to target, you know, like Rob Gronkowski. And I know that no one's going to be Rob Gronkowski in the future, but, I mean, you know, when you're looking at this team, who do you think is going to be that guy? Do you think it might become Sanu, who I thought accounted really well for himself in the second game? Or you think it could be, you know, the guy that didn't even play on Sunday, Harry?
Yeah, I think the hope is that it will be Harry. You know, the Patriots' red zone production right now is down 10% from last year. I think it's easy to look at that and say, okay, well, 10%, that's probably at least 5 to 10% of that is Rob Gronkowski no longer being in the huddle anymore. So that makes a little bit of sense. They're tied for 21st right now in red zone efficiency, which is obviously not where they want to be. They're right at 50%. So scoring touchdowns on 50% of their red zone drives, exactly. So I think that the biggest thing with the red zone is that it's really, really, and Bill Belichick talks about this all the time, it's really difficult to throw the ball in. It's when you get down there and there's not a lot of space, things happen real, really quickly, and that there's just not a lot of kind of space or time to fit balls into tight windows and get the ball in the air and get the ball in the end zone through the air. So the ideal thing to do when you get down there would be to run the football. You know, that's the easiest way still. If you're inside the five, especially, the easiest way and the most efficient way to score is still running the football. Now, with that said, they can't run the football, at least effectively in short yardage or really anywhere. So that is where we're kind of getting these struggles, is that they can't rely on the running game being a big factor down there, and they don't have a Rob Gronkowski, or they don't have kind of that box out matchup guy. So in comes N'Keal Harry. That's, I think, the hope, is that he can give them some sort of element of that. Now, the red zone was not his bread and butter in college. He wasn't a huge red zone production type of guy. But with that said, he still has the skill set to be that kind of guy if they can get it rolling in that way. So maybe that is what his role is this season. I think we've all gone back and forth, and how much is he actually going to play? How much is he actually going to contribute? Then he's inactive in the first game that he could be active for in the season, and you kind of stirs up that entire discussion all over again. Maybe the key for him is going to be those situational type snaps, where if he can make an impact in the red zone, if he can make an impact on third down, if he can make an impact in certain matchups when they have go up against smaller corners or whatever the case may be, that might be where he kind of is this year, and not a guy that's playing 100% of the snaps. I could be totally wrong, and they could send him out there against Philadelphia after the bye, and he could be your number three receiver. I don't know. I just think that what they really need from him is him to step up in the red zone and be kind of that option for them. I also think Sanu could do some of those things too. He's obviously not a jump ball guy. right? He's not going to go up there and catch high point fades and do all that kind of stuff and play above the rim. But he has the ability, as we saw on Sunday, to kind of understand route breaks and understand patience and understand leverages and stuff like that and be able to cut and get open. And they have some little kind of package plays they seem to have designed for him already to get him open in those kind of quick situations, whether it's third and short or red zone or whatever the case may be. So I think that they have something there with Sanu. He certainly played very, very well on Sunday night, probably one of the lone bright spots in that entire game for the Patriots. So good news there, and hopefully they get Harry back and he can box some guys out in the red zone.
Yeah, and Sanu has decent size too. I mean, you know, he's like 6'2".
Yeah.
So I mean, he has decent size, and you know, for a guy who's only been on the team 2 weeks, I thought, you know, he was targeted 14 times, made 10 catches. I thought he acquitted himself pretty well. Other than that interception, I thought he could have maybe come back a little bit, but you know, we're getting kind of nitpicky there, maybe. But
he could have at least
I just thought it
guy.
Was curious. That, you know, you're having trouble in the red zone. You have this big 6'4", 225-pound kid you drafted in the first round, and he's inactive. And then you activate a tight end who's been dinged up, and he doesn't play a snap in the game.
Yeah.
Did that strike you as odd?
Yeah, it was definitely odd. I think one of the reasons why both Izzo and N'Keal Harry didn't play at all in this game, N'Keal obviously being inactive, was that they wanted to go hurry up, and they really only ran one personnel grouping, right? They ran 11 personnel on every single play on Sunday night.
Every single play.
Is so unheard of for the Patriots. I would have to go back and really research it, but I would go out on a limb and say that that has never happened in Josh McDaniels' tenure as the offensive coordinator. To only run one personnel grouping the entire game is just so it's just incredible. And then you run 52% no huddle. You put a rookie in his first NFL start and you have him, you know, how does he fit into that puzzle, right? Can he even go no huddle yet? Does he know the playbook well enough? Does he understand what is being asked of him well enough to run a no huddle offense at this level already? And does he even fit in there at any point in time? You know, Jacoby Myers played one snap on Sunday because Philip Dorsett got a little dinged up and he called himself out for one play and he was in on the next drive. So Philip Dorsett played 66 out of 67 snaps. The only other receiver that saw the field was Jacoby, and Jacoby played one snap. I think there is, you know, they obviously knew going into the game that they were going to go no huddle, that they were going to play the same three receivers for most of the game. So my guess is that things just kind of added up to Harry just not being in the mix this week.
When you go 11, what really aggravated the hell out of me was the fact that, you know, Edelman, 11 targets, Sanu, 14 targets, and then that was it. You know, it just seemed like, you know, Watson had 5 targets and he caught 4. The one that he missed was really, I think, a game changer. If you're going to spread it out this way, why is it Edelman, Sanu, Edelman, Sanu, Edelman, Sanu? I mean, where was everybody else in this alignment? And when you looked at the film, did you see anybody else not getting open? Did Tom miss people that could have changed this game a little bit?
No, I don't think so. I think that actually the reason why it was Edelman Sanu so much is because Edelman and Sanu were open all day long, you know, and eventually if they're open so much, you know, you got to throw them the football. But the other thing is that they only played 3 receivers, right? So you're only going to play those three guys, and those three guys are going to see a lot of targets, and they weren't really throwing the ball Philip Dorsett's way. So the targets have to go somewhere, and they went to those two guys. I think the one kind of disadvantage of this strategy was certainly that they got a little bit fatigued, I think, towards the end of the game as a result of going no huddle and as a result of having basically 9 guys play every single snap on the game on Sunday night. And when you do that, it's just really it was 10 because Philip Dorsett missed one snap. So it was really 10 guys, and the only position that they were rotating was the running back spot. So they rotated Sony, Rex, and James White in at running back, and the other 10 guys stayed the same the entire game. So does the Edelman fumble happen if he's not fatigued? Does Mohamed Sanu finish off that route on the interception later on in the game And he kind of cut off the route a little bit. He stopped a little bit short, and then he didn't
turn
Earl Thomas down. So does that entire sequence happen if he's not as fatigued? Now, I talked to the players after the game about it, and I asked Sanu directly, you know, were you tired? It guys played every single snap, and you were going no huddle. It must be exhausting. And he said that, you know, it is, but we're well-conditioned, and we were ready for it, and that was the game plan. So we knew going in what we were kind of getting ourselves into. So I think that there's some element of that, too, in terms of, okay, well, they knew that they were going to do this strategy. They knew they were going to go no huddle. So hopefully they knew that to pace themselves a little bit in the game, right, and not get too crazy. But at the same time, it certainly was an element, I think, of fatigue. That Edelman fumble, I just really think, although you could tell that he was a little bit gassed. He had caught a couple of balls already on that drive. And when they threw him the ball, and you could just see that he was kind of like, oh man, again, I got to make another move. I got to catch another pass. And I think that he doesn't fumble necessarily if they aren't kind of going warp speed there a little bit. But at the same time, I do think that they found a little bit of something that clicked. A lot of the Baltimore defenders after the game too, Marlon Humphrey flat out came out and said that they couldn't stop the Patriots for a while there. You know, in the second and third quarters, really up until Edelman fumbled, the Baltimore Ravens were on their heels, and they couldn't really stop anything that the Patriots were doing. So I do think that they found a little bit of an identity there.
And speaking of that, I mean, what Humphrey said, did you have the feeling that that fumble was really the second big game changer of the night? Because, you know, they came out obviously in that first quarter, just ran all over the Patriots. It was total domination. But then it seemed like, okay, you know, they weathered the storm and they were kind of chipping away, and they almost tied it up at halftime. But then at the, you know, beginning of the third quarter, the score is 17-13. The Patriots are moving down the field. And I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this seems strange, but it seemed to me like they were going to take the lead there, you know. And then it's all of a sudden, it's like, how can they be getting ready to take the lead when they were so clearly outplayed? And I thought that fumble and the return was a huge switch in the momentum. And I didn't feel like, even though they went down and scored after that, I never feel like they got the momentum back.
Oh, no, Evan doesn't believe in momentum.
No, you know, it's funny because I don't believe fully in momentum, but I do believe in momentum in a vacuum, right? And in certain instances, you certainly can see that moment. I think my whole thing about momentum, not to go on a whole rant about it, is just that we hear that word all the time. It's just, I think it's just overused as a reason why teams win or lose games. I think a lot of times teams win or lose games just because one team plays better than the other. We don't have to talk about this momentum thing. But the fumble that Edelman had, that was a momentum play. I mean, you could see it.
Really was.
They were driving down the field. Really, I just pulled up their drive charts. They had scored on three of the last four possessions that they had touched the ball, and they moved the ball on every single drive. They went 62 yards, 25, 66, 45 yards so far on that Edelman drive, and then Edelman fumbles at the end of it. And they were on the last scrimmage, they were at the Baltimore 30. So they were driving again for points to maybe even go up in the game. And Edelman fumbles again, or fumbles for the first time. And it gets, not only does he fumble, but it gets returned for a touchdown. Right? If he just fumbles and they get down the guy, and Baltimore comes back out at their own 35-yard line or own 30-yard line, whatever the case may be, you play defense, you get the ball back, and you go back down the field, right? You know, it's not that big of a deal. But to have that get returned for a touchdown, that was an absolute backbreaker. I mean, that was the game right there, I would say. And after that, they did score again, but then they gave the ball. Baltimore went on two 14-play drives in the end of the third quarter into the fourth quarter, and then to close the game out in the fourth quarter, they killed about 17 minutes of clock with the ball in their hands. And it just seemed like after that fumble, the kind of desperation and the hope of a comeback really seemed to kind of escape the Patriots, and the defense just couldn't get off the field at that point. I mean, you go back-to-back drives, if you're Baltimore, 14 plays each, taking 17 and a half minutes off the clock, you're not coming back at that point.
Exactly. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was the fact that every time Baltimore needed to convert on third down or on fourth down, they were able to do so. Do you think that, how big was that in your view of how this game played out?
Yeah, I mean, they were 5 for 10 on third down, and what were they on fourth? They had that one fourth down conversion to Willie Snead, which might have been a pick play, might not have been a pick play.
But, it was a pick play.
Yeah, regardless, I think that getting off the field on third down is always crucial, right? You can't have the defense out there forever. But the one thing that I will say is that a lot of the times third downs, it's not necessarily what happens on third down. It's actually what happens on first and second down. And a lot of the instances, it reminded me, you know, I always go back to the third down thing. When a team is good on third down against the Patriots defense, I always go back to the Philadelphia Super Bowl. Because in the Philadelphia Super Bowl, similar to this game, it was third and short every single time, right? Yep. It's third and three, it's third and four, it's third and two, mm-hmm. it's third and whatever, right? But it's never third and 10. And the Patriots defense feasts on teams when they can get them in third and long. That's when they can get exotic with their blitz packages. That's when they can bring the zeros. That's when they can put pressure on the offense and create turnovers. That's their money down, is when they get you in third or eight and longer, that's when they can really feast on you. They were unable to get this Baltimore offense into third and long. And they were constantly in third and short. And an offense that really isn't that good on third down, because they're not necessarily that amazing of a passing offense, in Baltimore was able to convert 50% of them because of how the down and distance worked out for them. So it's really funny, because at the end of the day, Baltimore averaged 5.7 yards per play. They were 5 for 10 on third down, which isn't, you know, lights out by any means. It's good, but not fantastic. And, you know, there were some elements of this game where you look at the numbers and you're like, all right, this wasn't that bad. Baltimore rushed for 210 yards, actually 213, because they took three away for the kneel downs. But the 210 yards that they rushed for was only 7 yards over their season average. It wasn't like they were a team coming into this game that rushed for 125 yards a game and ran for 200 against you. They're mm-hmm. a team that came into this game averaging 200 yards a game and ran for 200 against you. So they played their game. That was the difference, was they played their game and the Patriots defense did not play theirs. Patriots defense's game is to get you into second and third and long and make you throw the ball against their secondary, and they just couldn't do that.
That's it. Every time that this team, the Ravens, have lost this year, it's been when they've been forced to throw the ball, and the Patriots just didn't do enough of that on Sunday. I wrote in my keys last week, as I usually write, is own third down. One of my keys last week was to own first down, just to do exactly what you were talking about, and that did not happen. Evan, we got a week off here. How do the Patriots go about this week? It's definitely going to be a lot different than some of the others that we've gone into over the past 3 or 4 years, when they're going in off a loss, and having a game like Philadelphia coming up is a daunting task.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be a pretty busy week for the bye week here for the Patriots. I'm assuming they'll obviously have the weekend off Saturday and Sunday, but I would think that they might be in the building all week this week. They're there today to have meetings. The players had Monday off. They're back in the building today on Tuesday, and they're going to go and have their meetings and, you know, film reviews and all that kind of stuff, and talk out what happened on Sunday and figure some things out. And then I would assume they at least have practice Wednesday, Thursday to try to kind of fix some of the things that they were struggling with over the last handful of weeks, really, on both sides of the ball. Defensively, they've obviously played extremely well, and we don't want to lose sight of the first 8 games of the year and just say it was, you know, just kind of go off this game. But they do need to fix this run defense. You know, this run defense is a concern, something that they do need to look at. So that I would assume that they have some heavy practices here the next couple of days, because they're going to have to hit some people to figure that thing out, right? You're not going to be able to just put on shorts and shells and figure that out in just kind of a light practice and a walkthrough type situation. This isn't mental. This is physical and technique issues. So I think that they're going to have some heavy practices, probably practice Wednesday and Thursday, and maybe have Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. But I wouldn't be surprised if Bill Belichick keeps them there all week. I honestly wouldn't.
Okay, well, you know, one of the bright spots
on Sunday. There wasn't a ton, but I thought the special teams played, especially the coverage units, I thought they played outstanding. They held the Ravens to like 12 yards average on their kickoff returns. Obviously, they forced a huge turnover on our old friend Cyrus Jones on a punt muff. And Justin Bethel, the new player, I mean, he recovered the fumble. I just thought if there was a bright spot to take away from this game, your special teams, I thought Jake Bailey also acquitted himself very well. And Nick Folk didn't miss a kick. And even Justin Tucker missed one, which I had to pinch myself. I didn't think I'd ever see that.
Yeah, right? Nick Folk made some bunnies, but hey, that's what you want, right? You know, if you're going to have – you're not going to expect him to come in here and start drilling 53-yarders. You made the 19-yarder. You made the 22-yarder. Yep. You made both extra points, 4 for 4. Take it. You know, take it to the bank, right? That's good with me. I think the big thing about the special teams, I'm actually going to write about this week, because the Patriots at this point – are kind of unprecedented in the league in terms of how many guys that are special teams only, right? They have Justin Bethel, obviously, Slater, of course, Nate Ebner. Those three guys only play exclusively special teams. On Sunday, Brandon Bolden, your guy, Murph, he played only on special teams. He didn't play on offense, although he's played obviously much more on offense this year. Some other guys that the team has kind of pointed out that are also part of this kind of special teams nucleus, Jonathan Jones, of course, who's excellent special teamer and coverage player. Rex Burkhead gets a lot of love from guys. So they have a big kind of variety of players. Chase Winovich is certainly, as a rookie, played a lot on special teams too, and he's another one that I think is going to be a guy that contributes on special teams probably through his entire career, even if he starts playing a little bit more on defense. So you start going down the line, 5, 6 guys that really prepare hard and are very, very good in their roles on special teams, and it's pretty rare. Obviously, the field goal kind of operation and the field goal kicking has plummeted a lot of the advanced stats down for the Patriots special teams units, but if you just look at their coverage units, their punt coverage team or their kick coverage team, they're in the top 10 in Football Outsiders rankings in both categories. So they have two really good coverage units, and I think the main thing is, though, is that they have these guys that are specialized special teamers, and Bethel and Slater, they follow each other around during practice, and Slater goes through this routine where he's kind of all on his own for most of practice with the specialists. He goes with the punters and the kickers, and then when the punters practice their punts, Slater's practicing being a gunner. And when the kickers are practicing kickoffs, he's practicing his kickoff role. And he says, you know, why would I stand around at practice and watch the offense and the defense play against the scout team or play against each other when I'm not going to do that on Sunday? You know, that's not going to be my role on Sunday, is to play receiver or to play safety or whatever the case may be. So he goes and he practices his craft. Now that they have Bethel in there, Bethel's been following him around kind of, and he goes around and does the exact same kind of man on an island routine that Matthew Slater does. So those two guys are working a ton together, and they really are. Bethel is like kind of a little bit starstruck, I think, by Slater. He's, you know, like a hero of his, it seems like, and it seems like a great relationship between those two
guys
brewing. So yeah, Bethel is talking. When you talk to him about Matthew Slater, his eyes light up, and he's like, you know, that's the guy for somebody like me. That's, you know, that's the gold standard of what you could be and the longevity that you could have in this league by just covering kicks. And Matthew Slater has done it better than anybody.
He sure.
You know,
has.
It's funny because I think in a couple of years, Matthew Slater will probably buy a Bethel jersey. So,
yeah, they both really seem to be hitting it off, and Bailey's obviously part of it, and whatever kickers is there is a part of it too. And it's kind of those four guys, because Bailey's also the holder, so they really don't, and Cardona obviously too. So those five guys, they don't really need anybody else. You know, they just have those five dudes, and so what they actually do is they have Bethel will block Slater as the gunner, and then Slater will block Bethel and vice versa. And that's how they kind of go about practicing both roles. So they actually end up practicing both as protectors or blockers in a gunner situation, and then also as the actual gunner. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. One of the things that, you know, we legitimately had a question about this summer was, you know, Jake Bailey, in terms of the directional punting and those plus 50 punts. I think he's done a really nice job with that so far this year. You know, he's been able to drop the ball a lot inside the 10-yard line, getting that nice bounce where it either goes straight up or backwards. And he had another nice one on Sunday night. I mean, I think he's having a heck of a season.
And yeah. He's still handling kickoffs.
Yep.
Yeah, he, I think, you know, if there's a, there might be a special teams rookie of the year award. He's certainly up there in terms of rookies and special teams, kickers, punters, return guys, that kind of thing, making a huge impact for the team. And I think that was the one thing, all like you said, Steve, watching him in training camp versus Ryan Allen, was Ryan Allen's, that guy's got a sandwich, right? He can just plop that thing right inside the 5-yard line and drop it right wherever he wants it to go. Whereas Bailey was just a big like punter where sometimes the ball would go 65, 70 yards in the air. And some of the times he would shank it. You know, that those were kind of that's always kind of the way it goes for big.
Been the trade-off.
Is, you know, you either get a boomer or you get one that goes 20 yards, you know, and he's gotten a lot better with his consistency and a lot better with his control. And I had three down inside the 20 on Sunday night. And now with Slater and Bethel and Terrence Brooks and John Jones and all these guys covering them too, they have a really good ability to go down there and down these balls. You know, Bethel, they had that element, forget who had put the pictures out there of all the punts that Bailey had down inside the 20, and Bethel is right on the ball every single time. And the ability to be there that quickly is really cool. And then obviously on the Cyrus Jones muff, like he's right on top of Cyrus Jones as soon as that ball hits the ground. So I think that those two guys, Slater and Bethel, are starting to kind of streamline and lead a really good unit. I didn't even mention Terrence Brooks when I was listing off guys too. He's one of those guys as well that is certainly a special teams ace.
I just wish one of those guys was there when Brandon Bolden caused another fumble. And that didn't happen.
Always comes back to Bolden.
Why not? Why not? All roads lead to Bolden.
But he, well, see, Evan, if they had put Brandon Bolden at nose tackle, I'm sure Murph would have thought that they would have stuffed Lamar Jackson all game long.
All day. Actually, he would have been knocked out on the first run from scrimmage, and then we wouldn't have had to deal with him all afternoon. But it's definitely going to be a interesting second half of the season with some of the teams that the Patriots are going up against. Like I said, nobody in this room, nobody on this conference call, nobody here ever thought that the Patriots were going to go 16-0 in the regular season. I can still see them dropping two games and easily getting back to the AFC title game. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that the whole – when you watch this team just with the eye test, and we also know how hard it is to go 16-0, obviously, but when you watch the team with the eye test, it just didn't – it wasn't a 16-0 team.
No.
It just wasn't. They were going to lose a game at some point. It was
maybe with Brown. Maybe.
Right, yeah. I think that when they got Brown, that was their one chance of really going after 16-0. But this offense – has had its struggles certainly, and the defense was due for a game like this at some point. They weren't going to go the entire way playing a perfect game every single week, so they were going to run into a loss at some point. Now this next four games, obviously five games and include the Baltimore game, it's a gauntlet. Philadelphia, Dallas, Houston, Kansas City, that's not an easy schedule. You know, and I think that there's a couple of games there that they certainly could drop. Certainly playing in Philadelphia, playing in Houston. I think that they could probably get Kansas City here. And I think that they'll probably win that game, depending on what Mahomes' status is. You know, Mahomes will be back in that game, I'm sure. But is he 100%? How is he moving around? That's a big part of his game. Obviously, he's not necessarily running like Lamar, but scrambling to throw. So that we'll see how he is and how stationary he is moving forward. But this is not an easy schedule. So the Patriots need to be careful here because they could, these losses in this five-game gauntlet could pile up. Now, I'm not saying they're going to lose all five because that's certainly not the case. But if they could lose a couple of them here and all of a sudden the AFC is getting a little bit tighter and they don't have the head-to-head to Baltimore anymore, and Baltimore only has two losses. So they could quickly find themselves in a battle for that one seed, where really after the Cleveland game and after they got to 8-0, I think everybody was like, oh, wow, the Patriots have already won the AFC. you know, they're gonna kind of sleepwalk to this thing. But now they kind of have a battle on their hands to get that first round bye, to get that first overall seed. And these games are not going to be easy. And a couple of these teams, I think, certainly have formulas similar to what Baltimore did. You know, they're not going to have three tight ends. They're not going to have the best running quarterback in the NFL. But they do have guys like Deshaun Watson and Dak Prescott who are extremely mobile and maybe 2 and 3 in terms of running quarterbacks in the NFL behind Lamar. And a lot of these teams like Philadelphia and Dallas especially have great offensive lines that can really lean on you and can really run downhill at you and are very powerful units that can get the running game going. So I think that those are some tough matchups for them. If this is going to be kind of the blueprint, if you will, of how to beat the Patriots, is run the football and really only rely on the passing game when you absolutely have to. I do think that Philadelphia has that kind of formula if they want to go that direction and they can execute it. So I'm interested to see what Philadelphia does, because they've kind of had a weird season, and Doug Peterson's had a weird year in terms of play calling, certainly, and yep. Their receivers have really struggled to separate and create explosive plays in the passing game. So I could see them run the ball 40 times like Baltimore did. But we'll see what happens. I think the Patriots found something on offense, but defensively, they do need to stop the run, but I still think it's a good defense, though potentially great defense. You know, a lot of people putting out there the last couple of days, too, just all the good defenses over the course of NFL history, you know, the 85 Bears and the 2000 Ravens, and the 2002 Bucks and those types of defenses, all of them had one dud, right? They all had one game where they gave up 35 against whoever it was. So the Patriots had their one dud. Let's see if they can right the ship. And from this point forward, they're probably not going to dominate good teams like they dominated the Cleveland Browns and the Giants and the Redskins and those types of teams. But hopefully they caught somewhere a little bit more towards the domination side than what we saw on Sunday night.
Yeah, and don't forget the Ravens have some tough games coming up as well. I mean, this week they face the Bengals, but then they face the Texans, the Rams, the 49ers, and then the Bills, who have a good defense as well. So they have a slate of tough games of their own coming up.
Yeah, so it's certainly – Patriots still certainly control their own destiny, right? They're the only team in the conference that only has one loss. So they can certainly still are in very good shape here for the conference. But it is – the margin of error just decreased a little bit is all. And I don't think the Ravens are going to run the table either. I don't expect to see that either. But I do think that there is a little bit more urgency now for the Patriots. And honestly, I know I kind of hate this cliche, but I do think that there's a lot to be said for it this time around, that this could have been a blessing in disguise for this team in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And the defense especially, it wasn't that they were doing anything wrong in my eyes, but they were reading their press clippings. Make no mistake about it. They had the boogeyman T-shirts, all the talk. The players, they got to the point. I mean, you know the Patriots. They're very tight-lipped, most of the players. It got to the point the last couple of weeks with the defense where you could just ask them any question that you wanted, and they were spewing out long answers about stuff. You know, they were feeling themselves, and they were happy to talk about it. Right. And the ghost thing with Sam Darnold and stuff like that. So this is a perfect kind of humble pie opportunity for Bill Belichick. This is kind of exactly what the doctor ordered if you're Bill, because if the defense keeps rolling, yeah, it's great in terms of winning games and standings wise. And you always want to win, of course. But they were starting to feel themselves a little bit too much, I think, for the coach's liking, at least. And I think that they wanted to kind of throw some water on it a little bit. Now, I'm sure they would have liked to have given up 37 points and won, you know, and been able to kind of do this after a victory instead of having it really cost them the game. But at the same time, I do think that it's a little bit of a blessing in disguise here.
Yeah, sure. And you know, Bill will play this to the hilt, you know, inside the locker room in the meetings. So
yeah, you think you got that boogeyman T-shirt? Yeah, look at your boogeyman now.
Yep.
I bet he wears one in there. And there's a guy out there, Yahoo Noise. I don't know if you guys know him or not.
He's a blowhard.
you know, came out with this little tweet. This performance by the Ravens should officially end the comical chatter that this New England defense belongs with the likes of the 2000 Ravens and the 85 Bears.
Yeah.
Now, Evan just said, minute ago that, you know, everybody gets one and they still get to be great. And I went back and I looked at the frickin' at the 2000 Ravens schedule. And he also he said they had largely played a bunch of wimps before tonight. And, you know, the juggernaut that the Ravens went up against in 2000 is just amazing. So, yeah, I don't know where we were talking about the Patriots as compared to that team when they went up against the likes of Doug Pederson and Spurgeon Wynn, Ryan Leaf, Tim Couch, Akili Smith, Kent Graham, Jay Fiedler, and Troy Aikman, who was in the last year of his freaking contract. I think they also played Jake Plummer and lost that game, you know. But the three biggest freaking busts that you can think of, quarterback-wise, Smith, Couch, and Leaf.
Those are the
people that Ravens team shut down. So
I remember,
you know,
watching Monday Night Football in 85 when the Bears were just destroying everybody. And Dan Marino lit them up for 38 points. And, yeah, you know, of course, that was the era before social media. But I remember the newspapers were all full. Oh, have we overrated this Bears defense? Is this the answer? I remember seeing that in the newspapers everywhere. And the Bears obviously recovered from that quite nicely.
Yeah, I think that the whole overrated, underrated thing is people just live too much in the moment with that. Right. It's one week they're the greatest, the next week they suck. You know, it's just, the truth is somewhere in the middle, right? Like, they probably beat up on some bad competition. There's probably something to be said for that, but they also flat out dominated bad competition. You know, I mean, they're giving up 3.5 points a game on defense. That's that
they're not winning these games 21-17 and we're spouting about it.
Right.
You know, they had a bad game. Some guys over pursued, some guys bit a little too early, didn't listen to me, and this is what you get for it. That's what you get for it. Evan, I want to thank you for being here today, buddy. It's always a blast when you stop by to serve me my humble pie, and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to eat it because it's pecan and it's pretty good.
You were right, big picture-wise, you're right about Lamar still. Right? Like, he still has a lot of limitations as a passer. His mechanics as a thrower are really still pretty awful. But I think that what we've seen and what Baltimore has been able to do is what I said at the top of the show is they've been able to craft an offense that works with his skill set. Yep. And that is unique. And if it wasn't for Greg Roman, if it wasn't for John Harbaugh, then maybe Lamar's career isn't, he might be the front runner for MVP right now. And maybe his career isn't in that kind of arc if he isn't put into a great situation. So he did have to go to a team that was going to be willing to think outside the box and be creative and allow a quarterback to run the ball 15 times a game.
And Harbaugh came out last week and said that, you know, when we decided to draft him, I was just like sitting at the table and I said, fuck it. You know, I don't have a history to live up to. I don't have a book out there that I have to go by. We can do this. We can bring him in here and we can build something around him and not ask him to be something that he's not, which is so many other head coaches and quite frankly, quarterbacks in the past have tried to do when they've come into this league and they are run first quarterbacks. They are guys that are going to, you know, tuck it under and have this kind of skill set. Either said to themselves, I can't live this way, or had a head coach saying, you're going to have to change and be able to do this on top. What he's doing right now is saying, this is what this kid does well. This is what we're going to go with. This is the way that we're going to be successful for no matter how long we're able to do it with him using him in this capacity. And I think it's kind of brilliant. I really do. The other thing that's shocking me is this is a guy that for the past two seasons had been, you know, on a hot seat in the media. I'm not sure if it in their own offices, but a lot of people have been asking, when are the Ravens going to make a change? And some people, including me, were saying that, well, who are you going to bring in that's better than Harbaugh?
Yeah, that was always
that was always my thing. So,
yeah,
like I said, Evan, thank you for being here. Tell everybody where they can catch your podcast, where they can follow you on social media, and of course, where they can see you on YouTube TV.
Yeah, all over YouTube. CLNSmedia.com is where you can read me, at Easy Lazar on Twitter, and then the Patriots CLNS Twitter account is at Patriots CLNS. And then our YouTube page, as Murph just said, we do videos down at Gillette. We do videos from the home office, like last night with me and Alex Barth. And the videos down at Gillette, me, Alex Barth, Trags on game day, Sierra Goodwill during the weekend on game day. And we do try to do videos pretty much every single day, or at least every single day that the Patriots have practice and have availability and are at Gillette. So we'll be down there today in a few hours to talk to the players and talk a little bit more about this game, I'm sure, in the bye week and all those kinds of things. So yeah, a nice weekend off here for us in terms of the games, but we'll obviously still be hitting the videos really hard and still hitting the content really hard. So I'll have a film review up here in the end of the day. And then I alluded to something about special teams when we were talking about that as well later in the week, talking to some of those guys over the last couple of weeks. So that should be good too. And thanks for having me on, guys. I always appreciate it.
No, man, we appreciate it. And don't miss the All 22 podcast that he does. Oh, also, yeah. Man.
You're plugging my own podcast for me. I appreciate it.
Dude, you know, it's my job. It's what
great
do.
Job,
man. Why I get the big money and play the big rooms. Thanks again for being here, bud. And everybody, check out EZ. He's always a blast to follow. He always has more knowledge. And when things get boring, he always goes and plays with a troll and freaking rolls him around like a cat and a mouse. And it's really a lot of fun.
Always fun.
It's
one of my favorite hobbies.
It really is, man. And you're so good at it, man. You should probably get paid to do it. EZ, thanks again for being here, man. We'll talk to you real soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care, Evan.
You too, Steve.
All right. Great stuff from Evan Lazar, as always. And he's always been really good to us and been on the podcast quite a few times. And we're almost at the end of our hour. But I do want to mention one thing. And you know, you guys were talking about Lamar Jackson and how, you know, the Ravens, you know, they totally bought into this kid when they yep. drafted him and they changed their offense. One of the things that struck me is, you know, and of course, everyone wants this, you know, revisionist history. And my timeline was full of stuff on Sunday night. The Patriots could have had him instead of drafting Sonny Michel.
Oh, God.
And I just shake my head at that. Okay. Because let's face it. If the Patriots had drafted Lamar Jackson, we wouldn't know if he could play in the NFL yet.
No.
Because he wouldn't have played a snap. Right?
Exactly.
He would be sitting. He would be sitting on the sidelines. He'd be with a clipboard. He'd be looking around, saying, "What am I doing here?" Because the Patriots don't. The Patriots don't even have the personnel to run this kind of offense.
No,
they really don't. What? See, when people talk about running quarterbacks like this, and why I'm against, because you literally have to change your entire offense for it to work. Okay, what they did out in San Francisco with Kaepernick. Why isn't Kaepernick still playing football? Because he would have to go someplace like Baltimore that has already changed their offense to fit somebody else. That's why Robert Griffin III is their backup and not some pocket passer, because that's not the way they're set up anymore. They've completely revamped this entire, you know, team in 2 years to play to this guy's strengths, and that's what you would have to do. And that's why these guys just don't have a very long career, because they do this stuff. They go out there and they unfortunately end up getting hurt. And then you're stuck with an offense that you could only run with that quarterback. So it is people just stop. This team.
I mean, we wouldn't have any idea if he could play or not. In fact, he would probably be looked down upon as kind of a bust, because with the type of offense the Patriots run, he's not a fit for that. So when we see him in training camp or in preseason games, he probably wouldn't look good.
No.
And that's that's not a knock on him. It's just, you know, just like if you put Tom Brady in the Ravens offense of right now, Tom Brady wouldn't look good.
No. And that, so, that's why we build a different offensive line and we have different receivers. And it's just, it's not him. And like Evan said, he kind of threw me a bone there. It was kind of like when I pitched batting practice to Butchie, and he takes me, 340 feet or 400 feet. And then he comes out to me, he pats me. That's okay, Dad. Look what you did to everybody else. You're still okay. He threw me a bone because, yes, the problems that he had coming out of college are still there. I don't know if he's going to be able to change and become more of a pocket passer or not. I'm thinking that he isn't, and the Ravens are just going to ride this out as long as they can. And quite frankly, I hope it's a nice long run. I really do, because I like this kid. He's a kid that comes in, works hard, is very respectful to those who came before him, he's just a very likable guy. So he's somebody that you root for, which is not something that you've been able to say about the Ravens in the past.
Exactly. And I think that's a good spot to put a bow on this one, because we're kind of past our, our time frame here. So we'll have to cut this off. But myself, Steve Balistrieri, Thomas Murphy, all of us here at One Patriot Place, we want to thank everyone for listening. Make sure you download the episode. And thanks again to Evan Lazar for joining us today.
Right.
We'll be back with another episode of One Patriot Place. Until then, how about those Patriots?